Hello, and welcome to the Strength to Be Human podcast with your host, author and playwright Mark Anthony Rossi. This show explores all forms of creativity for those searching for meaning and a place in the world. To err is human, but so is to love. Now, without further ado, here's your host.
Welcome back, folks. This is Mark Anthony Rossi at Strength to Be Human. Another exciting interview. I have a wonderful friend over the last couple of years as well, a poet and fiction writer, Brenda D. Ranter, over from Canada. Brenda, thank you very much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be with you today, Mark. Thank you.
I know it's been a bit of a scheduling thing, but that's how it normally is. And I don't want to make joke about it anymore about some big international thing, because the truth of the matter is that sometimes between the time zones of the United States, I've had a harder time than people from England or Canada. So, but it's just all about scheduling on people's lives and of course, the time zones, and sometimes even my own scheduling. So I'm always grateful to have another person on board that I've been trying to get onto. And I think for you, it's been nearly 4 months.
Correct. Well, I'm newly retired, so I also kind of help out with my grandson, getting him off the bus every day while my daughter's at work. So I got a little commitment going on there. But otherwise, yeah. And then in between your own artistic ventures and trying to find time for everything. But
I hear you. I saw his picture on the Facebook, so real cutie. Mine's a little older right now, but I have the same feeling. I like putting them on that bus, and I'm glad they're gone for a while, you know? I love them, but still, bye.
Yes, we need our time, right?
Exactly. Bye. Yeah.
So, I'm up here in Canada and in a very small mining town. Not a lot to do when our winters are almost 8 months long. Fortunately for me, I am a writer. I was a poet first. I've been doing that since the age of 7, which started out like a journal. And it was only very recently, it was back in 2016, that I actually had the courage to submit a manuscript and was fortunate enough to have a contract offered to me. And so since that time, I've been extremely busy putting out books and submitting to anthologies. I've been in 9 poetry anthologies to date, 2 of which I was the creative director. I've got 4 published books out as of right now, one of them being based on an autobiography. It's my story, but it is my first novel, full novel. The other 3 are poetry books. And I just completed another poetry book. And that's sort of the summation of what's going on. But living up here in Timmins, Ontario, in the Great White North, close to the James Bay frontier, we like our art.
All right, yeah. You know, when I think of small mining towns, I just don't think of Canada. You know what I mean? I think of Canada as a big city, a bunch of hockey players running around, everybody's drinking beer. So I guess mining town is not how I associate Canada. Not that there's not any out there. It's just the first time you really hear it.
Our main industries here in Canada, logging, mining, our resources up north are amazing. It's clean air, clean living, not terribly exciting in the winter, though, when it's like minus 45 to minus 50 Celsius. So you're really shut indoors a lot of the winter, and it really is the best thing to have an art form, a way of expressing yourself and passing those long months.
Well, I believe it, because I live on the borderline of Florida, and it's never really cold here. It's 80 right now.
Well, I could handle that.
Yeah, that's what I hear from my Canadian friends. I wish I was down there.
I could handle that okay. Yeah. Fortunately, my partner is a musician and a poet as well, so we spend our winters usually creating.
Well, I spent a lot of time in the winters in the 80s when I was in the military in Europe. Germany, Norway, Sweden, Denmark. So it's like, I'm so happy to get back to warm weather, believe me. I mean, I love being there and everything, but, you know, especially in Germany. I remember there in 86, we had 6 weeks of summer. The rest of the whole year was winter.
Well, we feel like that here.
Yeah, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I'm like, you don't even have like a couple of months of some warm weather? Nope.
Well, the truth is we would look at our summers consisting of June and July, because by mid-August, the nights are cold. You're wearing a jacket again. The days are hot, but you're wearing your fall jackets in the evenings. And, yeah, so you really learn to appreciate summer.
Yeah, I hear that a lot. People come. In fact, we have a lot of Canadian tourists that come by my way. So we meet a lot of them, and they're all happy to get some better weather, I guess. And I don't blame them. You know, I mean, you spend half the year bumming a cigarette from a penguin. You know, that can be rough.
Exactly. So, yeah, so this is what I do. I spend a great deal of my free time writing, and I've discovered another love is I paint. I'm painting as well, so that when I get a little writer's block happening, I go in the basement and I change my art form to something else, and it's pretty freeing, actually. With no pressure on myself with the painting. That's more for fun, and I have put huge pressure on myself as a writer. I think we tend to do that. I retired in October officially. And prior to that, writing consisted of writing on the run, you know, squeezing in an hour after work or an hour before bed, or you're waking up. I'd wake up with words in the middle of the night, go down to the computer and get them down so I don't lose them. It's really, and feeling frustrated at work a lot of times, because you get these great ideas that you're scribbling on a sticky note or putting into your cell phone, but not when you're in that mood, when it hits you, you really want to just be able to have the freedom to finish what you're doing, right?
Exactly. I have a show on it called Time Management, all about how you can handle these things as somebody who's active as well as wanting to be a writer. So yeah, when you're not retired, you really have to watch the time.
Oh, it was tough. And when I finally did retire, something happened that I just didn't anticipate was going to happen. I actually had a fear of my own writing, and I didn't write a great deal. The first few months that I was off work, it was like a challenge, because okay, smart ass, now you've got time to write, it better be good. And honest to goodness, I had this inner fear of writing quality. And I overcame that with going into more fiction writing. And I went into a whole new genre at that point, and found that was really freeing. And I think being a poet first makes your writing more descriptive, or you can actually paint a picture in a fiction story with words that you otherwise may not know how to do. And it comes really natural, I think, to most poets, that if you start to write a story, not that you're going to go on and on about the trees in June and under the moon, but more getting into the emotion or how the person felt at the time and being able to really articulate that. So this has been really exciting for me. I've done quite a few fiction stories, made some really cool submissions. One I did this morning, as a matter of fact. That one was a nonfiction story that I submitted, and it was about my life working as court security for the first 10 years of my career, and how I wasn't really made as a person to deal with the inadequacies and the plight of the human condition, because you felt helpless. And I'm one of these people that I could not shut it off. And so when you were working what I call in the hallways of failure and frailty, it is pretty consuming to carry home every night. So I talk about that in my short story, and I submitted it, and I was pretty happy with it, because I think I had a few people read it at home and say, yeah, I can visualize what's going on there. And I think that comes from poetry. So yeah, I've been pretty fortunate to be able to do both. So that's where I'm headed now, more into, I did a 10,000 word fiction piece that I finished, and that one was based on my immigrant parent, our grandparents, who never ever talked about their homeland. And I found that rather mysterious. You know, you'd ask them, you get a one word answer, and it remained a mystery for most of their lives. And when they passed, I used to create like stories in my head. Well, was it this and was it that? And I contacted a relative in Finland who told me my grandmother had left Finland because of a broken heart. And that's as much as they knew. And I thought that was really interesting that a 20-year-old, 21-year-old woman would get on a ship with her best friend and come across to Canada because of a broken heart. So you can just imagine how in my writer's mind, I created a pretty cool fiction piece from that little tidbit, and how she met my grandfather here, who was also an immigrant from Finland. And having examined them and studied them throughout my life and the way they interacted with each other, I said, there's a story here. There's something, right? So, yeah. So this is what I do. I'm a studier of people and human nature, and that's where I get my characters from. So that's been my latest project, and we'll be submitting that somewhere pretty interesting soon, too.
Well, I'm excited. Hopefully you'll have some shorter stories maybe that you can submit over to our magazine. We kind of cap out at 3,000. But it's not unusual to hear, because it's I find anyway. I know with me and a number of other writers I've talked with, that it's the normal progression in writing to go from poetry and then to dwell with short fiction, sometimes for years at a time, where they go back and forth for a little while, but mostly they find new things to explore with fiction that you just can't do, you know, with poetry, because poetry is really about the moment in a nutshell. Where fiction can usually just be about the character.
Well, that's what I'm finding, and I can lie in bed, and these people become very real to you when you're writing fiction. And okay, well, what is she feeling now, and where is she going? What is he doing? Why is his head in this space? And so I spend a lot of time thinking about my characters, and emotionally where they're at. What would they be doing? How would they be living? What kind of an apartment are they living in? What are they driving? How do they interact with other people? Are they affectionate or are they closed people? Are they funny? Are they serious? Are they sullen? So this is character study is, I think I'm in a very advantageous position, having worked in the industry I did, that I studied people for a very long time, and you get to read people by their body language and by the way they walk or the way they tilt their head, or if they talk to you with their head down and look at their shoes. And so these have been terrific tools for me as a fiction writer that I'm only now utilizing fully. So yeah, my career gleaned some pretty cool awakenings for me as a writer.
Well, I'm definitely happy to hear that, because oftentimes when someone has started out with poetry and done well, I don't know if it's an artistic ceiling, but they seem to hit something where, like, I got to go into something else now, a genre. Sometimes it's short fiction, which seems to be the normal way. Some people, they'll jump on to playwriting or other things. Right. And they're not leaving poetry, because it's a lot like high school. You're not leaving education. You're just going to college now, another level. And that's really what it does. But that usually that first good couple of years of that introduction into that new genre and them immersing themselves in it, they tend to get out some of the best and the strongest stuff of their lives.
I don't know that I need somebody to actually articulate that back to me if they liked my piece, and you know, because right now it's new. It's relatively new. Not to say that I haven't written stories before, but to get really seriously into writing them, you need the feedback. But certainly, I think there is a ceiling, and I think you're right. I'd like some feedback maybe from you on this subject. Whereas a poet, you get some days you just think, this has all been said before. And probably in a really similar way. So you're really almost desperate to articulate what you're feeling in a brand new way that nobody else has ever seen. And it gets really frustrating. I don't know if that's true of all poets, but do you think that is true?
I don't really believe that all things have been said, because we're simply so diverse creatures, different from anybody even 500-600 years ago. Plus, of all the new technology and all the new things that we've built into this world, there's always new, there's new viewpoints and new ways to discuss even older topics. But what right. what I do think is that for some people, poetry can run the course, not because there's something finite with poetry or something limitational with poetry. It's just that sometimes they've grown beyond what it could do for them. They have to find something else somewhere. It's almost like they didn't mind driving the VW for 15 years, and then they're like, no, I need a faster car now.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are more confident in their vision and their abilities, you know, and in their faith and things. And I think that sometimes poetry can't handle that. I actually found, because I literally stopped writing poetry in any connecting and consistent way for a couple of years once I went into my whole short fiction major phase, that when I went back to poetry in a more serious way, I found I was a better poet, and I seemed to be able to do more than I was able to do before, where before I felt a little frustrated, now I didn't, because the fiction opened up so many different things. So sometimes it's part of your artistic evolution to go somewhere else, because that's the only way you're going to be able to fulfill things inside of you that poetry can't.
Right. Well, that's really interesting, because I'm hoping that that will occur at some point, because I like I said, I never stopped writing poetry. I still do it every day, even if it's a little blurb or a little piece, or because it's what I do. But I just don't want to become mundane. I just didn't want to become seen that, read that, you know. And I guess that's a pressure that I put on myself as a writer. And then on the other hand, I say, well, maybe it has been said, but it hasn't been said by me. So you can look at it two different ways. There is a lot to talk about politically. The world is in a really interesting, and I'm saying that kindly, place right now. It's in a really interesting place where I think we are on the verge of seeing history that we never wanted to repeat, and to come to it with a perspective, especially at my age, where we know our grandparents sort of came out of that very secular mindset, and now we're, the liberalism is sort of being pushed out of the fray, and I'm frightened. I'm frightened for my kids and my grandkids, and there is lots to say, but I don't want to become another angry poet either.
I can imagine that, and I agree with you to a certain extent, but I honestly think that what's going on is you're having one extreme over the other extreme, and they're going to keep pushing back and forth until society can establish more of a balance. I really don't think that you can have 100% liberal society and push so many other voices away, and then wonder why when somebody else comes in, they're trying to do the same thing.
Right.
If they're not figuring out a way to strike some sort of a balance, because there are a lot of compromises that can be made on many, many issues, then we're going to have this sort of thing for a while. So to me, I don't really think it's historically unsettling. I just think that we have allowed too many voices to simply be the only voice. I know here in America, to simply believe that just both coastlines are the only ones that have a say in what the direction of this country is, leave the middle people out and the miners and everybody else, and then you wonder why when they come to the voting booth mad and they change direction on everything. That's why, because they've been left out from the very start. If we do this, I don't really see what the liberal, you know, morality is then, because you should be able to be inclusive, and inclusive can't just mean just the people that think like you. It has to be meaning other people who don't have that same lifestyle. And I know for the arts, funny enough, people are so inclusive and so tolerant, and then you get into politics where everybody's claiming how tolerant they are, but to me it just seems like both sides are extremely intolerant of each other, and I don't know how we get any progress that way.
Well, this is a thing, and I've written very few political pieces just because I don't want to be the angry poet, and I don't want to really cast aspersions on people either. But there are things that truly hurt my heart, and I think I addressed that piece more in my nonfiction piece about working in the industry that I did, where in a me society, who don't want to pay taxes, higher taxes to help the people that need higher education or better housing, or you know, they don't want to put money into social programs. And I addressed that because I worked in a system that bred apathy, basically. And I didn't want to put the money out for the mental health issues or the... So it's an interesting take. We're living in a really interesting time, especially for those of us with the hippie background. We're going, oh my gosh, what's happening here? What is going on? But yeah, so I that is another thing that I kind of shied away from, where my partner has just gone in full steam ahead, and because he's much more in your face politically. But yeah, it's an interesting time. I think that I still harken back to the poets in our country that I call them poets, but Leonard Cohen certainly, and
he's a fellow Canadian too, right?
Yeah, game changer. Neil Young, all songwriters, but they're poets first. Gordon Lightfoot. These are people in my country that inspired my writing amazingly, because they had that. They found an art form that I could really relate to, and made profound.
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, it looks like we lost the connection there.
It's okay. We're back.
Yeah. I when this happens, I just, through the editing, I can piece it together, and it's not that noticeable, so don't awesome. Even worry. Those three artists you had mentioned about, Gordon Lightfoot and Leonard Cohen and Neil Young, even though I'm familiar with all three of them, it was my impression that only Leonard Cohen was the actual poet that became a songwriter, where the other ones are pretty much songwriters that happen to be poetical. Is that the case? Because I thought he was more of a formal poet.
I have an argument. Well, here's my argument, is that I believe that the songwriters that really address the social and human condition are poets first, when they can write. Gordon Lightfoot wrote a number of, if you read that, and I always say, just look at their lyrics on their face and just read the lyrics. It's poetry. It's prose. It's beautiful. I think their ability to write the lyrics in the way that they do make them poets in their own right. The fact that they have a second talent, which is music, and are able to come up with a melody line that fits the words is just an added bonus. Because I live with my partner, has been writing songs for years and years, never thought of himself as a poet. And I'm reading his lyrics and saying, hon, these are poems. So now he has two books out. So I think
I saw that on Facebook.
Yeah, so it's he started out as a songwriter. And and of course, songwriters like himself, or when you're writing, like, say, a rock tune or whatever, it gets pretty rhymey. So I told him, why don't you just try prose? Just with a flow, And he found this to be extremely freeing. And he is an amazing writer. He does this play on words things that a line could mean two things. And I'm not even capable of pulling that off. And I don't know how he does it, but I think it comes from writing music for so long. But I would say that people that make political statements like Neil Young, you're a poet, dude. I like Leonard Cohen. I've read his books that were novels. I have all his works. And oh my gosh, he was amazing. Having said that, I think he closed out his career when he wrote I Want It Darker, which is an amazing song, but the lyrics. What a way to end your career. That to me is his masterpiece. That was the pinnacle of everything he has ever written. So yeah, but I thought that was true of Johnny Cash too. And Glenn Campbell, there's a couple of them just before they passed, probably wrote the most amazing words they had ever put on paper. And I don't know why that is, but.
Well, I think that many of the songwriters that wind up becoming very lyrical and poetical is they were in it as storytellers, and that really, really helps.
Exactly. So like that's where my argument would be, are you really a songwriter or are you a poet first? I don't know what the answer to that is, but I certainly have been inspired by a great number of them, and I appreciate the cadence to which they write. There's a cadence and a flow. And
Some really are just poets that became songwriters. I mean, I would prefer when I listen to Leonard Cohen to see her lyric sheet. Another good example, and it's someone probably closest to my own generation, was Sting. I remember the first couple albums he put out as a solo artist in the 80s. I wanted to read all those because a lot of those songs read as poems. If you read five or six or seven of them, you're like, how the hell is this guy not a writer? And he never was a writer. He just was a songwriter.
And I'm with you, Mark, on that one. 100%. He is an amazing lyricist. But I look at it again as poetry. Beautiful. Fragile. He writes that. He wrote that. And it's just an instrumental piece that he did with an acoustic guitar, but how fragile we are. The lyrics, the words to that are probably the most beautiful poem you would ever read. And yeah, he's one of my favorites as well. And I think I don't mention him enough. But yeah, and totally inspired. I'm very inspired by, I've never listened to music, particularly for the music. I always heard the lyrics first. But I was a singer from way back, a trained singer. So I think that came naturally to me that I would hear the lyrics always first and see if it was worth singing. If you don't feel it, you're not going to sing it. And
makes sense to me, yeah.
Yeah, and so we're talking about all the same people, Mark, that just blew my mind. I mean, these words are amazing words. They're a gift. So yeah, it's interesting how we can combine our art forms to come up with something that is really unique and different.
Well, sometimes they can be interrelated. I have a show that's coming out here in April called Music of the Right, and it's pretty much on how people use various music as they write, as a way to either get them out of writer's block or get them into a better mood or set a setting. You know, in the living room someplace when everybody's gone for a few hours where they can like just become inspired and help them to put together something. And I don't think it's a mystery that that music can move not just your regular person but even the artist to do something artistic.
Exactly. And that's the same thing I'm doing with the painting. I go down, my daughter and my partner bought me a beautiful art table, and I went and got the light, and I came home from work. This is shortly before I retired, and there it was, all assembled for me. Because I had started to dabble a little bit in my acrylic paints, which I hadn't done in 30-some years. And now, when I'm frustrated with the writing, I just change genres entirely. Okay, now I'm a painter. And it's fun, because I have no pressure. It's just for my own amusement, and I'm really enjoying it. And I'm actually enjoying what I'm making. And I think they're all really interrelated. Self-expression, we're really fortunate. Those of us that are preordained to be artists in some format, I think we are so blessed to have this outlet, this emotional outlet, whether it's words or music or painting or whatever your art form. I think it's a blessing. And I hope to pass that on to my kids. I hope my kids have gleaned some of it. I know two of my girls write, and that makes me really happy.
I made it a big part of my own children's upbringing. I don't pretend to believe that they're going to become writers when they grow, but I mean, that's fine if they don't. But I don't like the idea of them not knowing what I'm doing and not being able to do some of it themselves. Both of my sons have won the Black History Essay Contest in their schools twice, actually. And of course, we're not an African-American family, but it's free for anyone to enter. So I'm like, why not? Don't think you're limited because you're not Black. Write something interesting and respectful, and maybe somebody will learn something from it. And they've won the contest. My youngest son became third place in the state of Georgia for his essays. He was writing about a kid who came became a superhero through a termite and then stopped bank robbers. I know, cute. It's amazing. Yeah, but he was cute, and he did well with that. So I wanted them to get involved in learning what was going out there with Edgar Allan Poe and various writers and do a little bit of themselves. I even add some arts and crafts to it, because the American school system, they've stopped a lot of that stuff, and I want to make sure they still have a part of that in their life. I don't want them going to college and then they don't know a damn thing about literature or the arts. All they know about is, you know, what some guy did on Wall Street and what some politician said yesterday. That's not the whole world. So sometimes you got to round it out with some other stuff. And I made sure, and my wife made sure, that we've done that, you know. And I'm hoping one day our education system will come back to where it used to be, where I was younger. But until then, you know, we're going to do whatever we can to supplement them, because I just don't feel right for them being that being robbed for them. I don't really think it makes a well-rounded person.
Well, I think that's a common malaise, because right now, even here in Canada, a lot of our arts programs for kids have been cut. And it's a little bit disconcerting to me how they can view arts as being, well, just a side thing. I think it should be an integral part of who our children are, because it's such an amazing form of self-expression and in finding yourself as a person.
They have a different priority. I told my son the other day, and he didn't understand it. And then a couple of years later into the school, he finally caught on. But I told him from the first time that he could understand something, I said, listen, all those dummies over there are going to teach you is the value of a Picasso painting. When you come home, you're going to learn the value of Picasso.
Exactly.
He understands that now, but he goes, what does that mean? I go, well, then you see, they have a far different priority. So I remember telling his computer teacher, I said, listen, because he's raving about how my son's a great typer, and he could do all this incredible software stuff and the computer work, and this is good for his, you know, his job prospects in the future. I'm like, I'm just glad you taught him how to use a typewriter so he can go type up some poems. Thanks. Appreciate that.
Absolutely. Well, my daughter, my youngest one, was in public speaking, too, through her whole elementary school tenure. And she did really well in competitions as well. My older daughter, who's out west, has been a poet, has written poetry her whole life. And she's 32 now. And I'm really happy that they use that same method as a form of catharsis for expressing themselves. And I don't know what they're going to do with it. Certainly, I did not get published until very, very late in life. Didn't even think of submitting anything. And so what a shocker for this to happen to me, you know, 4 years before I retired. It was indeed a gift. And now they're sort of in awe of the whole thing. Seeing mums published, and So I think it's probably spurred them to write a little more than they normally would. But that's a good thing. But they're all, my kids are artistic, though. You know, they all do crafts and art forms of their own. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, I wanted them to be exposed to it, not just because I was, but also because I really think that, you know, it helps you become a fuller human being and maybe even a better citizen, because you get to see things from different angles, you know. And who's to say that solving a problem is only mathematical? Maybe it can be solved, you know, in a lyrical sense, or maybe it can be solved just by doing some kind of arts or crafts, because you learn all kinds of different solutions and all kinds of different creative things that you're not getting in the classroom. But these are still things that I feel that are important, that they spur your brain and they help your spirit.
Well, don't you think that there's internal epiphanies that happen when you write a piece of poetry, when you're feeling something about something so intensely, and you get it on paper, and then you'll go back and read that piece like a month later, and it's like an epiphany. I didn't know that about myself. I think that that's been a really interesting journey for me, is to go back even a year or two to a place, a totally different place you were at when you wrote that. And you're really shocked at where your headspace was at, and that you felt those emotions. You learn more about yourself as a person, I think, through writing. Even your ability to put yourself in another person's shoes, which I'm discovering with the fiction thing, is to create a character and actually get so inside their character that you're imagining the type of food they would eat or what they would wear, the type of car they would drive, the job they would like. I think it makes us studiers of people. Writers are very, very observant people. I think in order to be a good writer, you would have to be. You have to be a very observant person, quietly observing.
Well, I definitely think that writing is a more soulful act than what you get from your general life or even from an educational system, which seems to be very good at talking at you but not to you. Where the writing, you're talking to yourself in a way, and it's talking back to you. You're connecting to your heart and soul, which is what you normally don't do. And I think once you do that, you get to be more sensitive to other people, and maybe you get to be a better observer, because now you've learned something about yourself. Maybe it connects to something that something else is out there, and that's how you learn what commonalities are out there. Because you're not going to know that. Everyone's an alien and a stranger and a bad guy. Until you start learning something about yourself, then you realize that, hey, this is not so different.
Well, exactly. And in my capacity, working as a court security officer, and certainly seeing every type of personality, and hearing their stories. Because I would, you know, have to quite often sit in the cell area with them and whatever, and they talk to me, and I was a very non-judgmental person, unless I saw you 20 times. Then I'm saying, okay, like you're a lifer. But they all have a story, and if you're a good listener, you learn a lot about human nature, and you can find your empathy. I think empathy is really important. I think we are living at a time of great apathy, if anything, and that is really concerning to me. We have to be able to put our feet into somebody else's moccasins and say, you know, wow, I didn't grow up in this situation. I didn't live at that part of town, or I didn't have to go to that school, or I didn't have to put up with being bullied every single day or whatever. And I think until you have been able to feel that and have that empathy and that ability to feel maybe what the other person is trying to extol, you're really missing out on a lot of living in this world as a humanity, because we can't be always just judging people by the way they dress or where they live or what they drive. And some of the greatest people I know came from nothing. And I think that has been a big life lesson for me. I feel blessed that I worked in the industry that I worked in, even though it was also my demise in that I ended up with a terrible anxiety disorder and whatever, because I probably carried this home too much. But it was still something that opened my heart and allowed me to be maybe a better writer and a more empathetic writer and to relate better to other people and to other writers. I think when you get into that whole writing community and you start making friends online with other writers and it's really it's a fraternity. It really is. Everybody has a story and everybody comes from a story of some sort. I don't think we become writers by accident.
No, there's something, I don't know if you want to call it magical, but I think there is something a bit mysterious about how everybody got drawn to doing this and how they feel it enriches them and allows them to connect into places that they didn't feel otherwise. I've known a lot of people that were either in the closet because of their sexuality for a long time or maybe they didn't feel that they could be a proper member of society because they were disabled. Or I know a couple people of the transgender nature that I guess in the mix of the clothing and the way they looked and even the medical transition of all of that, it's probably not the easiest thing to go from the home to the pharmacy or to the supermarket without people staring or having a million questions even if they were not even bigoted, just the normal questions, you know.
Exactly.
Why you look like this and why you doing that and what's going on with this? I mean, those are actually natural for people, even if they don't realize that, you know, they're kind of rude and intrusive. But those people gravitated to writing because it might have been, at the time, the only instrument for them to keep their sanity, maybe to keep their dignity, and possibly to have the voice that they wouldn't have had otherwise.
Oh, absolutely. And my son came out to me. Oh, geez, how many years ago now? It wasn't that long, actually. Maybe 6 years ago. I always knew subconsciously. I think I always knew. He was not like my other son. He wasn't checking out the chicks. He wasn't doing it. And, you know, something just kind of subconsciously told me, And so when he told me, I don't even think I blinked. I said, and? And he was just stunned at my reaction. I said, do I love you any less? No, I just want you to be happy. And to make things worse for him, he has cerebral palsy. And so I was looking to get him independent living as well. So it was like a double whammy. Wow. To have, like, I had adopted two of my kids and, you know, and certainly to have this child, now a man, who is faced with a lifelong disability, and to be gay, the likelihood of him having a partner, now you've narrowed down his prospects considerably, and that really hurt my heart. You know, that's what hurt my heart the most, is that I really wanted him to experience love and to have a partner that he could share his life with, and now he's 31 years old, he's on his own, and he's got a community of friends, and I'm happy with that. But, you know, I think as a parent, you just don't want your kids to be alone. And that is another thing, empathy. There was a time back then where parents would never want to hear that news from their child. I'm really proud, I think, that we have come a long way, baby, in that respect. We love our children the way they are and accept them for who they are, rather than putting these false pressures on them to be something they're not. And, you know, I draw the line of breaking the law here, but I would say, no, be who you are. and express yourself and don't be afraid to be who you are. So that was another epiphany. Children teach you that, I think, the most lessons you're ever going to learn in life come from your kids. It teaches you a lot about yourself. And so you will incorporate that into your writing too. And that makes you a more open-minded writer. I think you had to have your kids slam a door in your face a couple of times and scream, "I hate you," to understand what it is. All the stages they go through, and the angst and the finding themselves. And it's a journey for all of us.
Mine's still really young yet, so I haven't had the "I hate you" slamming the door yet. I'm sure it's coming though, but not yet.
Well, it happens. Generally, it happens when you're at a mall with them. You take them to the mall every weekend. Then there's just one weekend they want you to walk like 50 paces behind them because you're no longer cool to be seen with. And that's the first time it registers that they have the ability now to separate themselves from you. And then so it begins, right? That's where the loggerheads will start, because they are trying to find their wings and you're still trying to hold on to them. But we all go through that. So I went through it 5 times. I raised 5 children. So it was an experience.
You have a lot more experience than I do. I only have 2, and that's quite enough.
Oh, 3 girls and 2 boys. Be thankful you have the boys, because you won't go through the whole hormonal rages to the same degree, and that's pretty painful.
That's what I'm told, but I always thought it would have been nice to have a daughter, but it just never happened.
But I just hope that all my kids have an art form when it's all said and done as adults, something, that they have something that they gleaned from me as a parent, and a way to deal with their emotions.
Well, I'm very happy that mine was able to do that and continue to do that. I mean, they have no pressure that I want them to do this or to do that. I just want them to be involved. And they've taken a lot of positiveness from it, mainly because, you know, to win something on something that you're not exactly totally dedicated to, it shows them that, you know, what can be done when you sit down and try to create something, regardless if it's not something you're going to do the rest of your life. So in many ways, it's sort of a confidence booster just in that. And that in itself allowed them to take the more serious approach to it. And I like that, because it's important for them to be able to see that sometimes, even outside your school environment, there's more to learning than just what they have to say. That you do have a platform at the home to learn things as well. And that's sometimes, I think, one of the things we fail in our artistic approach to children, especially here in America, is we just shove them off over there and think everything is going to be okay. And then we wonder, 10 years later, what is he talking about? Well, because you haven't really got involved in anything, you don't know what he's talking about. You might never will either.
You have to be very interactive while they're growing up and show, and even when they're pushing you away, they have to know that you're still very much interested in who they are as people. And I think that's key. Having said that, I was, before the show, I was telling you how my latest project is a manuscript titled Hairline Fractures. And this was a book that I was inspired to write when the Me Too movement became really pervasive of late. And I thought, at 60 years old, I think I have the courage to tell my story. And it's about sexual abuse. And I think that was probably the most painful thing I have ever written, but very healing simultaneously. You know, you write a piece, you cry, you write a piece, but you know what? It's there in black and white. And it's, the more and more I read it now, the less painful it is. Isn't that interesting? So I think that is also, art is healing. Art is a great healer. I haven't found a home for this particular manuscript yet because I think it would be better read by a female readership. Although I wish some men would pick it up and read it. But I still think it's the whole act of writing your most intimate pain is a really healing process, and only art can do that.
It's a prose, a poem project, or is it nonfiction?
It's written in prose poetry.
Okay.
It starts with my father dying at the age of 3. I was only 3 when my dad died of cancer. And it's how I felt emotionally abandoned by all the male figures in my life. And the ones that were involved didn't do me any good as a child, if you know what I mean. And I talk about that. So it left for... It's a lesson for fathers, I think, too, to really build up your daughters, to really make them feel secure in their womanhood and that they're powerful women, that there's a power in the female gender that should be celebrated, not diminished, because otherwise you end up where I was, always feeling ashamed of something that I had no control over, or always feeling intimidated by the other sex, the opposite sex, and feeling somewhat subservient. And that came at a very, very young age. So again, my writing has empowered me in so many ways as a woman, as a mother, as a grandmother, as a wife, as an employee. And I think it just can't be underscored enough that the power of writing is a tremendous gift. And if you are just starting out writing, don't give it up. Even if it's for your own personal gratification or a way to figure something out about yourself or as your own personal art form, like, don't give it up. It's a precious gift, and it certainly has served me well. I'm 60 and it's served me for 54 years, and that's a big number. That's a big number to say that an art form has gotten you through a lot.
Well, I've done a show on art as therapy and writing as therapy. I've even written a book about it, writing as therapy. And I know we made numerous allusions of it throughout the interviews because it's a very common theme, without even me bringing it up, that oftentimes the writer will use writing in the beginning as a way to understand themselves better, or maybe even to have some emotional or trauma management through it all, and then later on, you know, become an artist with it. So it just seems to be an extremely common thing that to hear almost all the time.
Yeah, and I think I know a few artists that are struggling with different subject matters, and they're just friends of mine on Facebook and reading their poetry. You can see what they're working through. You can see the issue that they're dealing with, and that's huge. That's a huge gift, because if there's other people out there struggling with that same issue, well, they'll relate to that particular poetry, right?
Oh, yeah, it can really make a big difference. I remember hearing back from people when we did that one interview with the Irish poet, that when she went through some psychological counseling, discovered that she was gay in her mid-50s, and how that changed her entire life. She was married at the time with children.
Wow.
Yeah, and changed her writing, of course, and a lot of people really reacted to that show. It was a big hit on the network here, on people learning about that and maybe trying to come out to themselves. You know, I think she had mentioned to me that she had more family and friends who made contact with her afterwards. It gave them all a deeper understanding of what she went through and you know, what she has to, you know, face going forward. And so it was for her a big thing to do the show to talk about that and have all those things happen. I've never heard something like that before, but There's probably more stories out there that we don't know about because people keep them to themselves.
But I think that's the story of a human success when you come out the other side. And I think, like, even when I wrote my manuscript, I felt like at the end, I've come out the other side of all this abuse and all this self-flagellation that I had done for years and years. And I think for this particular lady that you're speaking of, to come out the other side and live your truth and face it and just put it out there. There it is. You know, it takes courage to do it, but it's also a gift for other people going through it. I think anybody else that, somebody gets me, they understand what I'm feeling. And if as artists we can do that, then that's the payoff. It's not how many, it's not a royalty check at the end of the year. That is like so far in my rearview mirror. The gratification is when someone reads something and says, I really learned something from that piece, or I feel that way. There's my gift. That's my payoff. Otherwise, why would I put it out there? You know, and I think I always said that I wouldn't write for people. I wouldn't write for book sales. I'd stay true to my art. I got some flack for that. Well, how do you expect to sell a book? And I there was on one site, I actually got flack for that statement. And I said, well, I didn't start out writing to be a commercial writer. I started out writing because it's what I do. It's what I am. And to change what I am to get a bigger royalty check seemed really ludicrous in my head. It just, you know, if the book sells, certainly I'm thrilled. Certainly I'm really pleased with what I've created. And it apparently appealed to a lot of people. That is really a beautiful thing. But if that's your primary motivation, I don't know how genuine your work is. You know what I mean? I would question that, but it's certainly never been my primary motivation. I just share it because I like sharing it, and if somebody gets it, that's a gift.
There is a big difference between those that write commercial and those that write literary. So they mm-hmm. have two different paths, and there's nothing wrong with one versus the other. It's just that... Right. You know, you're going to have different expectations. I mean, you write a commercial novel about a bunch of people, you know, running around with swords in the desert, and you got demons flying everywhere, and this and that. I mean, you're not going to have a deep catharsis from someone who says, I really love that sword guy. I mean, it's not the same thing as someone writing about maybe child abuse and overcoming that and becoming somebody that has self-esteem and confidence and breaks the chains of that's far different than, you know, some Star Wars figures.
Exactly. I think I'm speaking more poetically than people that write like fantasy novels. And like, I'm certainly writing fiction stories now, and just because I love getting into the whole character thing. But again, it's just because I enjoy writing the story. I enjoy getting into the character's head, and for me, that's the fun part, but I guess different strokes for different folks. But yeah, I think I'll be a purist though when it comes to poetry, just because it's what I do and what I've always done. And I think I'd stay pretty true to that art form right there.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I don't make fun of the commercial writers, that we have them on here as well too. And there's a lot of commonality with other writers because they still have to go through the same stuff that you and I go through. The submission process, the rejection process, the confidence situations, the family scratching their head. Why don't you become a lawyer? These are all the same things they have to deal with that you and I deal with. It's just that they have the extra element of, God, if I don't sell 10 more thousand copies of this, they'll get rid of me. Yeah, thank God I don't have to worry about that.
Your source of income, that's a whole different pressure. That's a whole different ball game. If you have picked up, if you're like the superb fiction writer and they're going to, you know, we're going to commission you to write another book and whatever, I would probably have a very different attitude about what I'm saying at that point. But I think right now as a poet, I just write from a purist level. It's because that's what I've always done. Like I said, getting into the fiction thing is probably a different, it would put me in a different mentality. But again, I don't know that my goal at the end of writing this story isn't to sell so many copies of the story. So I don't know what to say about that. But no, fiction writers that are commission writers, that's a tough road to hoe. That's
no doubt. I just try to remind writers so they don't make too many comparisons on certain things. Mm-hmm. That the writing itself is important, but we have to also admit and not be afraid or be prejudicial that we might not all have the same goals, and that's okay.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, like I said, I did get a lot of flack when I said, "Oh no, I have to stay true to myself." And I was quasi attacked for that, but that was my for myself. Like, I wasn't insinuating that everybody should do that. And I said, no, that for me personally with poetry, the day I start writing poetry to make everybody else happy. You know, I've always written it as catharsis, and that's where it comes from my life experiences. So I just don't know any other way to write poetry, I suppose. Or like I observe people and I'll write from my interaction with them and what I learn from them, or that's my style of writing, I suppose.
And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. People sometimes forget that oftentimes we write in that fashion because that's the first way we know how to be authentic, and then you kind of go from there as you're moving in your writing career.
Exactly. It prepared me for the journey I'm on now with the fiction. It did prepare me. And like I said, the things I gleaned from it, the ability to get emotion into a fiction piece, would be much more difficult, I think, had I never written poetry before. So there's a payoff. You learn a lot as you get older and you go along with every piece you write and every year that transpires. There's changes in the style and the way you write. You'll be less, what's the word I'm looking for? Frivolous, or, you know, you'll start to pare down your writing and get to the point, and without losing the poetic integrity.
Yeah, being a sort of like a brevity, or being frugal with words. Yeah, that's
exactly. That's happened to me, where my poetry could be 3 pages long, and now I can say it more artfully and succinctly without losing the emotion of it in a page, you know. And I think that was an evolution and a growth for me personally. I don't know. There's some poems that call for the 3 pages, that it just can't be done in a page. But certainly I think I was being too superfluous with everything. And I learned to pare it down. And I'm happy with that change in my writing, certainly.
I like it too, because over the years, I went from a longer poem to a shorter poem, and I was always more comfortable that way. I just was happier to stay in a certain length. And it just went a lot naturally after a while. It's not like I'm counting words or counting lines. It just came about that way, and I prefer that, really.
Yeah, exactly. Well, now in the whole fiction thing, most times you're doing a submit. You know, they're calling for so many words max. And that is a challenge, because then you're going, okay, well, I've got to tell this whole story, make it really interesting, make the characters come alive in 3,500 words. And I'm finding that challenge really interesting. I kind of like it, because if you've gone over the 3,500, you're going through your story and you're, again, taking out what's superfluous and going, is this really necessary to the storyline? Or is this just fluff? So, and that's another exercise in learning as you go along to cut out the fluff. And as I don't know, you're a playwright, and I'm really interested. That's something that I wouldn't even know where to begin in that process. So that's interesting to me as well.
Well, they all seem to approach it differently, but I always approach it like a plan. So if I already have an idea or a story in mind for a play, I have to approach it by writing down the various things that happen, sort of like an agenda. And then from there, you kind of build in the scenes and the acts and everything along that plan. That's how I work, because I couldn't do it just from a couple of characters talking and suddenly, you know, 85 pages later, it's a play. It doesn't really work that way for me. Some people believe that that's a good way of going about it, but there are different ways of doing it. I prefer to have it something that has a plan, where I have a really good idea about what's transpiring. Very little changes by the time I'm done with the play. Yeah, because I already have an idea of the beginning and the ending.
Though, right? Isn't it like you have two people that are, it's an exchange and it's a dialogue. So this would be really challenging to me to do a complete work based on dialogue. But then, like you say, you're setting a scene and you've got props and you've got...
Well, you have certain actions and certain things you want to occur to get to the goal of, you know, the conclusion of it all. And for some people, the plays are about just the interesting things that happen with the characters who are meshing together. And for others like myself, I write a lot of plays because there's a certain thought or an idea or theme that I want to get across. And the characters become really instruments for my theme rather than the other way around.
Okay.
So sometimes you can have lots of character development in a play and then find out that was all just to get to the point I was trying to make. I prefer those kind of plays. They're different than most people who write a play where everybody's just talking and joking and, you know, laughing or getting angry and, you know, and all of that. And then, you know, they believe that, you know, the play's whole existence is about drama, where drama could just be like anything else, another instrument to get to where you want to go. So it's another way of looking at playwriting and drama in itself. But I can't go into a genre without putting my own thought and my own imprint on it. Otherwise, it gets to be I'm doing the same thing somebody else is doing, just putting my name on it. And I'd rather not invest time if I'm not doing something that I find is different and unique. So that's how I approached it. And it keeps the play shorter, which I like, because if anyone knows anything about drama, you have a far greater chance of getting a one-act play produced than a full play, because there's simply less resources for them. It's easier for them to commit to your mm-hmm. work.
Right.
You get a lot more credits and a lot more, you know, done that way. I'm trying to finish up what I'm doing right now, and it's been taking a while. It's about a woman that divorced her husband. And he goes about his life feeling guilty that he simply failed as a husband and started another life again. And on his deathbed realizes through his son, who keeps telling them that there's more to it than you realize, his son goes to his mother and says, "Listen, I understand all this privacy about you being gay, but there's a certain point where you just need to tell this guy before he dies that he shouldn't feel guilty on him being a failed husband when you walked away from him because you're gay. And you just never told him."
Right.
And what you're doing in your own privacy or your own gay rights is you're harming somebody. And you don't really have a right to do that, especially since that's somebody who you married. And so that's what that play is about. It's something, interesting twist on gay rights and...
Absolutely.
And parental stuff and marriage and all that, so... That's the kind of play I prefer to write. It's a play about mostly issues. There's still people there. They're still interesting, but it's the issue that's more interesting to me than anything else. And I've had the idea for a long time, but quite frankly, it's only in the last 5 years that even and I'm not a gay playwright. I'm just a playwright, but mm-hmm. I've recognized that the gay drama that was out there wasn't long longer being confined to gay drama houses, but lots of places were now producing gay drama, which opened it up to lots of other experiences. Like 10 years ago, there wouldn't be a gay drama house that'd be willing to even produce that, because it's against their narrative. Oh my God, you're being blasphemous to gay people, whatever. You're being anti-lesbian or whatever the hell they would say. Now it's like, well, that's interesting. So sometimes you could do things that you have to wait for the world or society to catch up a little bit to you. Otherwise, throwing it out there and having a big fight all the time is not helpful. Now that'll be considered something interesting because it isn't anti-gay. It's just simply practical about some of these things that you may be stuck on the ideological bent can hurt people rather than help them because, you know, you're being insecure and maybe sometimes even selfish. So that I think I'll have a good chance on, and I don't have to even send it to some place that's gay. I could send it anywhere, and I think I'll have a good chance now because it's just so common right now. I was talking to a gay director about it. He goes like, yeah, he goes, gay plays, like, we all yawn now. It's not a big thing anymore.
But certainly that is a situation, because I actually have a friend that went through exactly what you just described. And she had no idea her spouse was gay. And they had a family. And it's the whole trauma, the whole, oh, you know, the whole, their lives were just upside down for a time, right? And it's a real issue. It certainly is, because there was a time when you couldn't, it would have been harmful to your career to come out. So it was easier to just get married and do the straight thing, lie to yourself every day and your spouse. And so there's two facets to that whole storyline. There's like, wow, it's fascinating. And I saw with my own eyes how it played out. And yeah.
Well, that's what he's trying to do in that play. He's trying to argue to his mother that the time has passed for her to start protecting herself, because being gay is no longer that controversial thing anymore. And it's now time to protect this guy before he dies, believing with all that guilt and all that stuff that, you know, he failed on something that he could have never succeeded in the first place. You know, and once he gets through all her rationalizations and everything else, he gets to finally get her over there to try to do something right for a change in the situation. So it's gonna be interesting. Ironically, as we're talking about plays, it's the last play I'm gonna write for a long time. I'm kind of like giving it up for a while because there's some other stuff I want to do with writing a memoir, and I have a couple screenplays I want to do. So I want to do some new things I haven't done before. So I've been paring down my entire career to putting all the books out that I can on everything that I want out there, including this, and then stopping for a while and doing some other bigger and different projects. You know, I just keep the show going and keep the magazine going, but that's pretty much it for a while, and I'm kind of happy to do that.
Well, I certainly wish you great success with those endeavors, and I think that's what the beauty of our lives are as artists, is that you can always move on to something new and undone and just keep doing it. I don't know what's going to be around the corner for myself in 5 years. What will I be doing then artistically? So it's a really good open question.
My answer to it all is, wow, it's not like I've done this for 37 years and I'm tired of it, because that's not the truth. It's just the realization as you're getting older that there are simply other things that you want to tell and do, and other formats are going to work better for it, period.
Right.
You know what I mean? Especially in the stage of a memoir, I mean, there's really almost so much you can do in short works and plays or whatever, where you just need to get it out there and speak plainly, and it's only going to be done in that type of environment. So it's really simply about just trying to move on and do something else, because I don't know how other poets or other writers feel like, but you know, after you put out your 10th book of poetry or your 5th book of fiction, or you know, having a, you know, 65 plays produced and everything like that, you don't really get tired. You just get, what else can I really do to top that, or what's going to really add to that? Well, sometimes you find the answer is there isn't really much you can do beyond that. unless something spectacular comes along one day that you want to go and do. I want to rush to do this interesting play that came up, or this or whatever. It's you need to find new ways to express yourself, and those avenues will definitely work.
Absolutely. Well, I do for my publisher something really interesting. I write the Amazon book descriptions for new poets, and wow, that's a gift too. I get to read these manuscripts, and I have to describe them, and to make them, to sell them, and that has just been a really interesting process, and has probably made me a better writer. I really appreciate the different styles and the different, all the books seem to have a theme, most of them. And it's been a real learning process for me to do that. I actually really enjoy doing that. That I do it for free because I like it. I like doing it. Sure, send me another one. Yeah. And I've had a lot of those poets write to me and say, oh, I can't believe how you got my book. Like, you really understood what I was trying to say. And I mean, of course, when we are on Amazon and we read the little blurb about the book, you certainly want to catch the reader's attention, right? So I'm really happy that I was able to do that. But I also, I get so much joy out of it. And it actually tests me as a writer, because you have to look at, even if it's a genre that you really don't enjoy, something that I just don't enjoy this, but you have to look at the writing standing on its own and describe it. And so that's made me a better writer as well. So every experience, I think, that you have, and every opportunity that you have to read somebody else's work or study the way other people look at things, and certainly, like you said, there's different ways of writing a play. People will approach it differently, and I think poets and writers all have their own formula for doing that, and it's just interesting to read it and say, wow, I never thought of doing it that way, and that's really interesting. It's not for me, but I think it's really cool that somebody has done it that way, right? And yeah, so I take everything as a lesson or a learning tool, or something I put in my toolbox, and I call on it later.
And I agree. One of the things that I do on the show is particularly is I remind people that they need to help other writers whenever they can. I don't care if it's a couple markets they're giving them to share with them, or maybe they do a quick little proofread for something they did. I encourage book reviews. You should try to do something for the community, because it also helps you as an artist yourself. If you spend the time to read somebody else's work, and now you're writing a couple paragraphs to help them promote that work, that's actually going to help broaden your own view on things. It helps kick in things in your mind. You might see a couple poems and go, man, I wish I thought about it. I did. Those are the things that get us excited. And sometimes the best way to get excited about work is to read somebody else's work rather than your own.
Oh, and there's definitely a number of poets that I've read and went, wow. Okay, like just wow. Like, you rock. Just beautifully done, and really different, and I really appreciate that. And then there's some that are really romantic writers, and all their books are that genre, and then you go, it's really interesting that they can stay in that headspace and stay on that topic and still find more and more to say. And I find that really interesting. Because I don't know that I'm that type of writer, and so that's really interesting as well. It gave me an opportunity to just study different people that have just write different styles of poetry and on different themes, and how they approach it, and how they end their books and begin their books and format them. And I really enjoyed that whole process. I've learned a lot from other people.
And that's the reason why we need to try to stay connected to the community itself and to other writers on a regular basis, because it allows us to peer outside of ourselves and see what's going on, and allows them to do the same thing to us. And oftentimes we can be each other's, not just cheerleader or critic, but sometimes we can be the lifeline out there to humanity, because it's real easy, even if you're not a person that suffers from depression, it's just real easy to feel alone when you're writing, and that's not always the best thing to feel.
Exactly. I don't, and I'm very blessed that I have a partner that shares my love of words, and we've certainly been asked, even by our local newspaper, like, are you in competition? And not for one second. First of all, our styles are so different. There's no way to compete. And I'm like, he's like my biggest cheerleader, and vice versa. We read each other's stuff constantly, and we'll give feedback. And if a line really sucks, we'll tell each other, I don't like that, take that out. That just doesn't jive. And I think it's really nice to be able to be honest, but I'm certainly blessed that he's like my hugest fan, and vice versa. I love his work, because I'm not even capable of writing the way he writes. So I'm always in awe of that. I don't know. There's writers where stuff falls out of them. That would be me. It comes in a torrent, or it doesn't come at all. And he is a guy that will ruminate over a line for 2 days. So we're totally different writers right off the top. And I think the end result, and I think the reason I can be so open-minded about it and not be in competition with anyone is that because I write these descriptions, everybody's so different. And that's the beauty of it. I've seen some that are real kind of similar, but, you know, in their styles and whatnot, but still the thought processes are different, and probably how they go about writing the piece is different. Certainly with my Hugh, when he, like I said, will ruminate over one line for a couple of days, and that would drive me like batshit crazy. And I'm the writer that wakes up at 2 a.m. and there's a complete stanza in my head. And I don't even know where it comes from. I call them like celestial gifts or something, but I have to get it down now because I know it won't be there in the morning. And
yeah, there's a lot of writers that are like that. I know we had a couple shows about that, how different ways people write or how to go about things. No two are really the same. I would say my approach is probably closer to your partner's than it would be to yours, because I'd rather work on something continuously and until it's done, even if it's on paper or in my head, because I'm more comfortable with having a better notion of where I'm going versus then just putting a couple words and hope everything works out. I like planning more, and that's what the kind of writer he probably is, more of a visualization planner. You know, and other people, it's just more about, I'm in the mood and I'm gonna go write 20 things. You know, I'm not like that.
Mine doesn't work that way though. It's like feast or famine. It's when it comes, it falls out of me. And I, like I said, I'm not even quite certain where it comes from. Once the piece is finished, I'll leave it for a couple of days and go back. And there'll probably be a little editing required at that point. But that's how I work. I can't say that every day I'm inspired to write something terrific, because that's not the case. That's when I go paint. It falls out of me. Something will be bugging him, a social injustice or something he saw on television or something that he's really excited about, and he will just start writing and ruminate. Like I said, oh, take this word, move it, nope, change it. And his process is totally different than mine, but the end result is always just terrific. I'm always really in awe of what he's written. So, like I said, it's a blessing that we first of all write totally different, because we'd be fighting over this computer. But we write really differently, and we are each other's quarterbacks. Like, well, you can do this, you know, and I really like that. And so he's got a manuscript sitting too right now that's pretty much in the completion, and So we're going to get working on that. I'll do the formatting for them, but certainly it's a great ambiance in my home. He's a drummer and he plays guitar as well, and I'm surrounded by musical instruments and piles of paper with words and books everywhere, and we're living the dream that way. I gotta say, living the dream.
I agree. That's the kind of life I prefer to have myself. I just still have two little kids running around, but I do my best.
Oh, good for you, though.
I started late, so I'm a much older person for these kids being this young, but that's just the way it worked out.
But that's okay. It'll keep you young.
Yeah, that's what they keep saying, but I don't know about that.
Well, you'll always know what music is popular and what colloquial sayings they're going to come out with. That what does that mean? You'll always know what's rad.
Yeah, that's what they try to teach me this stuff. I'm like, oh, I don't really care.
And then they'll tell you you're wearing the dad jeans. You know, that's not what people are wearing now.
Yeah, I hear that a lot.
It's cafe in style.
I dress too old. I mean, quiet. These kids, they're funny. So what projects do you have that are already out there in the marketplace that we should remind people to go, you know, go check out or go pick up?
Well, my last book that was released in November of 2018, that one was called Heart Sounds. And it's a book that I wrote basically in real time. It's a whole year's worth of writing. And I thought it would be interesting to put a book together in real time to see how you've changed in a year. And I also meditate in the morning. And I have what I call inserted in this book. It's called Murmurings. And what they are these little epiphanies that would come to me in meditation. And they're like a couple of lines long. And I'm getting pretty famous for this on Facebook because I tend to do it all the time. But almost every morning now. But the whole book was based, like I said, I wanted to do a journey in real time. Because I had certainly enough long written prose to put this book together. And yeah, and I'm really proud of this because there is, when I get to the end of the book, I can really see where it's become lighter. My thought processes have lightened up a little and I'm coming out of a dark period of my life. And it sort of, it coincided with my retirement, ironically enough. So it also showed, I could see that window to freedom coming. And so the change is really visible in my writing, the way I started to view my future. And I ended up in a much happier place. So yeah, that's available at Barnes & Noble and on Amazon.com and CA. It's called Heart Sounds Murmurings by Brenda Lee Ranta. And I also have my biography on Amazon. All my books are available there. I've contributed to 9 anthologies as well. 2 of them I was the creative director for CTU Publishing. It was actually I put out a book on disabilities, and not so much disabilities as silent disorders, because I think the whole world, we're all walking around with one or the other of them.
Wow.
And that book did really, really well. I could not believe the amount of material that was being sent to me by different poets. Just really honest pieces. Really honest about whatever malady that they had to struggle with every single day, silently. Because it's not something that's visible, like cerebral palsy, or you're not in a wheelchair, but you're bipolar, or you're manic depressive, or you've got autism, but you're high functioning, or you're Asperger's, or you've got anxiety and nobody knows just how bad your anxiety is. So these people were so honest, these beautiful poets. So that book, it's called I Have a Name. It's a beautiful anthology, and I was really proud to put that together. And I did that one for my publisher, and I did another one called in French, existentialism. And it's a book about, it's called Essential Existentialism, and it's about the meaning of life. Because, and whether you're coming from organized religion, or you're a spiritualist, or you're just agnostic, what is the meaning of life to you? And that, I put that anthology out in a call for submissions right after, who had just passed? One of the most brilliant physicists in the world, Stephen Hawking. Yeah. And I was so moved by this man. And he had just passed, and I thought, what does the general person, what do they think the meaning of their life is? I couldn't believe, I was inundated with this beautiful poetry about their perception or how they perceived the meaning of life to be. So I'm really proud of those two projects that that I was able to be the director for, and very proud of the submissions from poets from around the world, virtually around the world, on both of those books. So yeah, I've had some really terrific opportunities to work with other poets as well. And I think that's why I'm so interested in still writing the book descriptions, because I really enjoy it. I enjoy everybody's poetry, and so yeah, I'll just keep on keeping on.
I hear you. Brenda, thank you very much for being with us here. Folks, don't forget Brenda Reed Ranta. She has a number of projects out there. As you can hear, she is not only an artistically wonderful individual, but somebody that really has a connection to humanity. I'm hoping that's somebody that's going to stay in connection with this show, especially when you have some other projects coming up. And I like to hear what's going to go on with this hairline fractures too, and hopefully someone's going to grab that and put that out there, so this way it'll become a useful venture maybe to somebody else's healing.
Well, thank you so much, and I thank you, Mark, for this opportunity. I've listened to quite a few of your podcasts, and just beautiful. It's really nice to hear from other artists and how they do what they do. So I thank you again.
I'm happy people just tolerate my strange Italian New Jersey accent. But thankfully, it worked in a literary sense where no one's really giving me a hard time about it. I think people see the value of what we're trying to do and other people's voices and just everyone being authentic. There's no artificial and pretend here. And this is what the reason why I like the show so much is because that's what I wanted to do, making sure something that was informative and not Hollywood, something that was real. And so you're another one of those real characters that I always wanted to have on the show, and I've known your work for quite some time, so I'm really blessed to have you on here. Folks, that's Brenda Lee Ranta over there in Canada. Don't forget Amazon, Barnes & Noble, probably Kobo too, one of my favorites. They carry so many of our titles. God be bless you, Brenda, and thank you very much for being on here.
And thank you. Have a great day, and thanks for having me. Take care.